Money. Shoot my band. This is Mr. Michael Dean, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level with the Freedom Fiends at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. Can you feel it, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker? Can you feel it? Is it working, Ben?
It's working. I feel it.
Cool. And this is the Freedom Fiends radio show, and today's episode is part six in our 36-part series, applying the 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of world service of Alcoholics Anonymous to this new fellowship that we've formed called Status Anonymous, which is all about getting bad people and bad ideas and all government, all belief that government is good out of your head. Would you say that's a good summation, Ben?
Yeah, because we want to be free. We want freedom. We are freedom fiends, after all.
Yeah, we're fiends or fiends for freedom. And we actually did something interesting that you don't get a chance to do often and realize you're doing it. And that is, as the co-founders, and actually at this point probably only two members of a new organization that will one day be worldwide. Now, you know, sometimes judges sentence people to AA, which I think is bad because I think you can only, for a lot of reasons, but I think you can only get sober if you want to or if you're ready. What would be in Libertarian Paradise, in LibPair, what would that be? Would you be shunned into going to Status Anonymous, I think? I think that'd be it.
Yeah, except libertarians don't seem to be very good at shunning one another. They tend to accept each other's crap in that area.
And that's something Status Anonymous helps teach you, is that if you say that without a government, everything would be done by shunning bad people, and then you don't shun bad people in your own organization when it happens, you just say, hey, man, we got to all stick together. You're hurting the movement, when you point out that certain people are horrible. Yeah, you got to learn to be able to shun, and Status Anonymous will help you with that. But we made a decision not only to turn our lives over to Status Anonymous, but we made a decision today about the canon of Status Anonymous. Now, tell what I came across and what we decided and why we decided it, Ben.
So, Michael came across something called the Revised 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we were looking at the two, the original and the revised version, and it seemed to be the only real difference is that the original version was in the past tense. It was kind of like we did this, we came across this, we learned this, we've done this. Whereas the revised version is more in a present tense. So, for instance, in step six, step three, the old version said we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him, whereas the revised version says as we understand him.
Yeah.
And so we had a special secretive meeting and voted, and we came up with a bohemian
gulch. That's when any two or more members of the Freedom Fiends gather and secretly centrally plan liberty, and we did that today.
Yeah.
It's named after Bohemian Grove, which is supposedly where, like, you know, the 12 men who run the world secretly, the people who are so rich that, like, you know, they you don't know their name, but they're like, you know, they're Bill Gates's secret boss and, you know, Barack Obama's secret boss. That's Bohemian Grove. This is Bavarian Gulch. And so we just had a decision. We just had a conversation that was like four sentences long. I'm spending way more time explaining it than it took to come to this decision that we would base Status Anonymous on the revised steps, because I kind of like the revised steps. And, you know, in like a decade and a half of like regularly going to AA meetings, or now about a little over a decade, I didn't really come across this argument. And when you go to an AA meeting, they generally have the steps on the wall on a big poster that's like 3 feet by 5 feet or something. And You know, it's kind of like, this is our canon. This is our bill of rights or our bill of what we have to do, you know, so you see it every day. And I never really paid it much attention. I went to a lot of book study. I went to some book study meetings. I went to, you know, tradition studies and step study meetings. But I never heard an argument over this. I'm kind of surprised because a lot of people in AA, especially older people in AA, tend to be really like, this book is the Bible. I mean, the book, the AA big book, it's, you know, the main book, not the 12 and 12 that we're working from mostly here, looks like a Bible, you know, like when the way it's bound and printed and the size and shape of it, it looks like a Bible. And people quote it like, oh, brother, you better read page 449, which actually really kind of messed up a lot of people's heads when they did the third edition of it and like, or the fourth edition of it. And like what was on page 449 was now on a different page because they'd added stories and taken out other stories. It really did mess with me. I mean, there are like, there's meetings named after pages in the book, you know, in San Francisco, there's one called it's called the 449ers. I always thought it was called the 49ers, like, you know, San Francisco, like not the football team, but like the, you know, the striking gold in 1849. I always thought it was a reference to that, but then I like went to the meeting and I saw it printed and it was 449ers, like page 449, which I forget. I think it's about finding acceptance or a new pair of glasses or something. But so yeah, we made a decision that like in AA would have taken like world involvement and, you know, like meetings upon meetings and meetings within meetings and meetings of business meetings and 12 concepts of world service being referred to and combed over and argued about. But since we're getting in on the ground floor here, we're making Status Anonymous. I just said, Ben, what do you think? I think it should be in the you know, use the revised ones. It's in the present tense. And you said, yeah, sounds good to me. So it is canonically, it is our canon from now on. We've decided.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Yeah. All right. So read step 6 from Status Anonymous. Yeah, man.
We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character.
All right. And before you give the disclaimer about the God word, we want to point out that these things do go in order. And this is a series. So if you didn't hear the other ones, you can go back and listen to the other ones. But we try to make them self-contained. So if you didn't hear the other ones, it'll work. So the last step four and five was making us fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves and admitting to God ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. So basically, at this point in Status Anonymous, you've made a list, you checked it twice, and you've read it to one other person who, you know, has your best interests in mind and isn't going to mess with your head or tell secrets on you. The sponsor is usually the person you read that to, or someone who two people could co-sponsor each other in Status Anonymous. You know, we kind of like point out, okay, well, you tend to do these same patterns over and over. You do the same things over and over with different people. You have this, there's, you know, same book, different chapter. So then you've taken this long list and culled it down into a short list of your shortcomings of, you know, where you love the state, where you love bad ideas, where you embraced bad people. And that's in step 6. You look at this list, you discuss it with your sponsor, and you become willing to remove these defects of character. So Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, at first when I read this, the very first time I read it, I thought, well, doesn't really seem like a big deal to me. Of course, you want to remove these things. That's why you're into the middle of this on, you know, why you're doing all this. But it wasn't really until I read the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions where it explains it in more depth, where I realized that this is really a lot tougher step than it seems if you're just reading through them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 like that.
Yeah,
because it really requires you to stop and analyze things on a deeper level and say, can I really let go of that? Is that something I can let go of? And am I ready to let go of it today? Am I, you know, right now, can I let go of this today? Or do I need to, you know, hold on to this pacifier a little longer? Or can I come to grips in my mind that I absolutely refuse to ever let go of this thing, whatever it might be? You know, we're talking about Statists Anonymous and also, you know, destructive people in your life or destructive habits or whatever it might be that you need to get rid of. As far as statists go, this could be something like, you know, but what about police protection? What about the roads? What about air traffic control? What about defending us from the evil, you know, people in the foreign countries?
It could also be people who are like, you got to vote for somebody. I'm going to vote for Rand Paul, because if you don't, they'll put in someone worse.
Yeah.
And that guy's
it can be faith in election process, faith in your senator, faith in your governor, faith in your mayor. You know, if we don't elect Bill, who knows who's going to be our mayor? Well, you know, what does it really matter? They're all infected with the same thing, which is the state. It's the idea of governance. So you can't, you know, you have to come to a point of being able to let go of all of that. And
I would say, and like every person that calls themselves a small government Republican is really suffering from statism while believing they are free of statism. Like the Tea Party, like small government Republicans, they all talk like they're anarchists. I want government so small I can drown it in a bathtub. But that's still saying like, we need to support this insane system of 51% can vote to kill and rob the other 49% and thy will be done, 'cause it's government. I had a friend that was really, really into the government in, California, and he co-owned a bar. And one day the city of San Francisco decided, your bar has too much loud music. And it did not when, 20 years ago when this bar started, this was a warehouse district, and now people bought up property around it. And there's lofts and people living nearby, and they're complaining about the noise that was here when they moved here. And they literally took the bar. They took away their liquor license, and without that, the bar had to sell the building, and it turned into like a yuppie fern bar. So, but that guy's still like, I tried to convince him like government is bad. And he's like, no, it does good things. And, it was a gay guy who's a Democrat in a city that's like every politician is a gay guy Democrat. And he was like, oh, they have my best interest in mind. And I'm like, no, they don't. Not when there's some developer stuffing millions of dollars in their pockets.
And how much is that like an addiction? Exactly like somebody with a heroin addict,
the guy still votes.
Heroin problem or an alcohol.
The guy still votes 5 years later.
They can't let go. Even if they want to shrink government down, they still want to pet it and stroke its forehead and tell it how much they love it. They can't let go of that last remnant to say, it's evil. And they'll even admit, they'll say, I'm voting for the lesser of evils, but if I don't, the bad guy will get in there. No, dude, you just admitted that they're both evil.
That's how you perpetuate evil. By that belief. Worms. That's me cocking a gun right there. In the music.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends, brought to you by Freedom. So, Ben, I found out last Monday that last Sunday was the Super Bowl. Did you know that?
I'm not sure we can say that word on the air.
Oh, that's right. The big game. Yeah, they called it. Yeah, we're not authorized. So,
we didn't pay our pound of flesh.
Right. So there was an ad by a beer company that starts with a B and it has Clydesdale horses in all their ads. Let's just say that. And it was a 30 or 60 second Super Bowl ad. I did see the ad. I literally didn't know it was the Super Bowl until the next day. Like, that's how out of the loop of everyone saying we should do everything all together and pick sides I am. I'm not like that. So I have nothing against sports. I have something against the fact that people are nationalistic about their town, about players in a game. You know, people sit on their couch and say our team when running to the mailbox would give some of these people a heart attack. So there was this ad. I did see the ad on YouTube, and it was basically making fun of craft beer. Like, you know, Budweiser is the good beer. It's the beer that's, you know, there's rock and roll playing in the background, and they show like lots of people in a room together enjoying their company and drinking beer, and they look like salt of the earth, like good American people or something. And then they showed like these kind of three like neck beard kind of hipster guys like sipping and smelling and like enjoying the nuances of craft beer. And like basically the ad says, if you like good things, you're a sissy. That's basically what they're trying to say. What does that say about the world when that's what the market research indicates? I'm not saying anything bad about Budweiser. I'm saying that like, what does it indicate when they find that that's what the market research that they've done on people says that's what people will react to? Man.
Yeah. You know, if you actually go through, because what they do in the commercial, they flash phrases. They don't have, there's no words spoken, but they fussed flash over. Phrases.
Fussed over is one of the craft beer ones. If you, but if, my friend says, if you don't drink out of the toilet, you're a fag. That's what it was saying, but I don't know.
One of the phrases they say, the people who drink our beer, and then there's a slight pause, and then it says, are people who like to drink beer.
That's the actual words. It's what?
That's the actual words that it uses. People who drink our beer are people who like to drink beer. That's like, people who eat our french fries are people who like to eat french fries.
Yeah. It's saying that's nothing just, about it's the nonsensical. Product. It's a truism. Yeah. You know, it's saying up is up. Yeah. And what is it saying about the world that their market research indicated that nonsensical truisms would appeal to the target demographic? And the funny thing is they make fun of like pumpkin ale in this. Doesn't Budweiser make a pumpkin ale craft beer, sort of like mega craft beer?
Yeah, and not long ago, they bought out a company, I think it's like up in Oregon or Washington or somewhere up in the Northwest, that specializes in pumpkin ale beer. So what's it like for those employees that just got bought out by this mega, international mega company that's, you know, headquartered right next to the EU in Belgium, and this massive corporation buys them out, lays off a bunch of their employees, and then makes fun of the very product that is their signature product. Wow.
Corporatism.
And then there's one phrase in there that says, we'll be brewing us some golden suds. And it's like, oh, you talk some real good English there, don't you, feller?
Yeah. You're the beer for me. Yeah. I don't know, man.
I'm half souse watching somebody else do sports, and I need me some more of that sloshing down my gullet.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Idiocracy. You ever see that movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, you know, if you haven't seen this movie, you should go out and see it. The basic premise of it, and we're going to get back to to working our steps. We just take it a break to talk about alcohol in the middle of an AA meeting. No, it's not an AA meeting. It's a Status Anonymous meeting. It's basically this really funny comedy there. The premise of it is that the army finds the most average man in the war in America. He's got like average height, average weight, average IQ, average looks, and they put him in suspended animation. It's supposed to be for a year, but like they get defunded and he ends up like waking up 500 years later and everybody in society is dumber than him, and he's now the smartest guy in the world. And people make fun of him, like he can talk correctly and nobody else can. And they're like, you're some kind of fag, you know, when he talks in complete sentences. That's kind of what this Budweiser ad reminds me of. It's like they have decided that their target demographic is Idiocracy.
Dude, you like money? I like money too. Yeah. We should hang out.
Yeah. That's from Idiocracy. All right. We'll be back with this a note from our attorneys. After this note from counsel.
Yeah.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
We're doing step six of Status Anonymous. We were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. All right, Ben, start with the disclaimer of the God word. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the hangups that people are always going to have. They even a person who believes in God or they're religious or whatever, they're immediately going to have some defenses that go up because, you know, there's so many brands of Christianity out there and there's so many different variations in theology that a person can very often find excuses as to why, you know, okay, that's why I can't believe this. That's why I can't get on board with this, because you use the word God.
Yeah, there's other religions besides Christianity too. Yeah. You made it sound like there aren't. Like, people don't like this because their brand of the only religion is going to be different than other people's brand. No, there's many religions. All right, want to make that clear.
But our point in this is that you don't really even have, you don't have to be a Christian, you don't have to believe in God, you don't have to have any kind of theological basis. If we just recognize that there are indeed things that are greater than the individual, there are powers that are greater than one individual, we can rely on each other, we can rely on, we're not socialist, we don't believe in groupthink, and we don't believe in, you know, redistribution of wealth and centralized planning of the economy and things like that.
Yeah.
All that's yucky commie crap to us. Can we say crap on the air?
Also say that Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist and his feet stink. I like to say that at least once a show if we're not talking about politics, so people don't think we're filthy leftists. We're not filthy rightists either. We're just leave us alonists. Yeah.
Yeah, so, but we can still, and our point with God is, we can still recognize that there are powers that are greater than ourselves, and we can recognize that tapping into those powers, and whatever, however you see those powers that are greater than yourself as being, we can utilize those things to get us out of the situation that we're in. And of course, the situation we're in, we're recovering statists. We are trying as best we can to do these steps and get out of statism and get that thinking out of our minds and be free.
Yeah.
How does that sound to you, Michael?
That sounds good to me. How do you do that, Ben?
Well, you know, I should read the first steps. We haven't done that this show, so let me read through the first.
Change alcohol to statism for this.
We admitted we were powerless over statism, that our lives had become unmanageable.
Yeah.
We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, we made a decision to turn our will, our lives. Oops, let me read that again. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Number four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Number five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And we get to today's number six. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And one other thing I wanted to touch on, something that we've talked about in every episode so far, is this difference between government and state. And people who have listened to me talk over the years, you know, I often say this, they probably get tired of hearing me go over this difference, but I think it's so critical to understand that, you know, we have two separate things, and you can use any terminology you're comfortable with, but there's these people who do stuff. They wear uniforms, they work in, you know, halls of authority, and they drive around in cars with badges painted on the doors, and they have, all those people are government. all those people in Washington, D.C. that wear suits, all those people who enjoy fancy titles, that's the government. But the state is that thing in our mind that makes us believe that all that stuff is legitimate. And that's our real enemy. Our enemy is that belief, that assumption in our mind that government is legitimate. And so, and what we're trying to say in these, in this series, is that there's a parallel between having faith in the state and addiction. This idea that there's something out there, this state, that's magical, and then it can fix all society's problems, and all we have to do is trust in it. Well, that's faith. That's making government your religion. And it's addictive. And just like alcohol kills the pain of life by stupefying your brain, that's exactly what the state does. The state gives us a false sense of security. It allows us to say, oh, well, you know, I don't have to think about that. The government will take care of it. Or I don't have to think about my old age. The government will take care of me. Or whatever. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen because the state's going to take care of it. And that's just blind faith in something. And what we're trying to emphasize is that there's a better way of having your life. There's a way to be free of that kind of addiction. And so that's why we're doing these steps. We're trying to ourselves and help others at the same time be free of that addiction to bad relationships, like having a relationship with government, but also any other bad relationships that drag us down and cause us to be dependent on stuff that really is not good for us.
Preach it, Brother Ben.
I want to read one little section out of the book. And again, the book that we're talking about is 12 Steps and 12 Traditions by Bill W., written in 1953. And in the step six in that book, it says, "This is the step that separates the men from the boys," so declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness to and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all of his faults without any reservations whatsoever has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. And the emphasis in that is without any reservations whatsoever. And this is the real difficult part of step six. I mentioned earlier that when I first read step six, I thought, oh, that's kind of weak. That doesn't really have a lot of substance to it. And it wasn't really until I read the book talking about step six that I saw that, no, indeed, there is a lot of depth to step six, because it is about dealing with your faults in with that phrase, without any reservations whatsoever. And Michael likes to say, you know, talking about people who defend the state like they're defending their mother. And when you're talking to somebody and you're saying, well, you know, government's not that great, it does this and it does that or whatever, and you see that moment comes in the conversation where you see that that person is going to defend the state like they're defending their mother, then really, whether you believe it or not, or whether you acknowledge it or not, the conversation's over. You're not convincing that person of anything. They've come to that point of where they have latched onto a thing that they're not going to let go of no matter what. And as long as they have their clutches, you know, grasping that thing, then they are not willing to set that aside and look at it in any other way. It's a lost cause to continue talking to them.
Yeah.
So human nature drives us to be free. There's a deep thing inside of each and every human that just cries out continually to be free. It doesn't matter, you know, how rich you are, how poor you are, or whether you're in jail, or whether you believe that you're free walking around, you still know that you're not really free. You have all these things hanging in your life that keep you from doing the stuff that you want to do and just living the way that you want to live.
I look at I am a deist, which means I believe in something, but it's not specific. And I don't think it has magical powers in day-to-day life. I don't think it, you know, cures your kid of cancer in my case, or, you know, makes the bus come on time when you're late for work. Also in my case, in a lot of people's cases, they've had that thought.
It makes you win a football game.
Win a football game. Yeah. My kid died of cancer, and, you know, I prayed for her to not die, and she died. And a lot of people told me, oh, it's God's will, and I wanted to punch them. And it really was kind of my final straw in believing in an intervening, meddling puppet master God. And I ended up kind of at where Thomas Jefferson was, you know, the deist idea that it's kind of the watchmaker theory. Like, God is this force that created everything, wound it up, and let it go. And not that it's running down, but that it's like kind of self-sustaining, but that there is free will and the decisions of people influence where it goes. And my concept of like God and the devil is pretty much like freedom and statism. Like, I think the desire that people have, the statism, the duality in people, the part of the duality of wanting to rule people, I think that's the devil. And that leads to murder, rape, theft, fraud, aggression, depression, sadness, torture, all the bad things in the world. And I think that the desire to be free, you know, is what drives the desire to create, to innovate, to engage in commerce, to, you know, educate, to learn more, to stand on the shoulders of giants with discovery and information. Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I see that actually, you know, I find a lot of biblical support for that idea that government literally is a manifestation of evil. It is the worst human desire to dominate another human being. Whether, I mean, if you think about it, in reproduction, in human reproduction is something that every human who is of normal, you know, I don't know how you say this politely, but every human who is functioning correctly is going to have a certain desire to reproduce.
Hang on a sec there.
Well, maybe you don't necessarily want to raise a child,
yeah,
but you have those physical urges to want to.
And I would also say that people who don't mate with the opposite sex and mate with the same sex often still have a desire to raise children, you know.
Yeah.
It just made it sound like you were saying that's wrong, and I had to jump in there, and I'm not politically correct at all. I hate political correctness, but yeah. Right,
but that desire to have that physical activity taken to a twisted, perverted level means that you want to use that to harm somebody else against their will. You know, so now a wonderful and a beautiful thing becomes a horrid and wretched thing when it goes from a loving, caring relationship or even just a wanting physical satisfaction, when it breaks away from that and it becomes rape, it becomes a really, really wretched, horrible thing.
Or when it becomes a very controlling marriage.
Yeah, which is just a variation, you know?
It's just, and I think that's government just a long, is like it's that. It's a long, slow rape, I would say. All right. We'll be back after this note from our council on the Freedom Fiends. Pause for a cause.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And, I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Here we go!
Ben. Preach it, Brother Ben. Preach it.
Yeah, so we were talking about human nature, and human nature wants to be free of addiction, free from dependence, free to pursue our own interests. And the heart of every human desires freedom. But it's kind of a two-edged thing. You know, you can't really legitimately want freedom for yourself and want to dominate other people, want to, you know, forcibly against their will, keep them in some kind of slavery. So the other side of the coin of freedom is wanting freedom for other people as well, wanting it for yourself and wanting it for others. So it's kind of like the golden rule. You know, Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And libertarians often use that phrase of the non-aggression or the zero aggression principle, which is, you know, we don't want to aggress. We don't want to initiate aggression.
It's the same thing, man. The non-aggression principle is the golden rule. I will say that right now.
It really is.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like two sides of the same coin in the sense that we don't want to aggress on anyone else and we don't want anyone to aggress on us. It's a two-way thing because we believe in self-defense. So Jesus didn't really, he probably did because after all, he went into the temple and beat the money changers. So he was not necessarily
did he beat
a pacifist.
The money changers or just flip over their tables, or are there different interpretations of that?
Well, according to the scripture, he, ahead of time, he actually sat down and braided a whip of leather and went in and actually whipped them.
Ah.
So it was a premeditated thing that he actually did. It wasn't even anger. Some people said, well, it was an anger outburst. But no, he premeditated. He thought about it.
There's also the quote that gun rights people like, well, we're gun rights people, but some gun rights people like to quote I don't know the passage, but it's something about Jesus saying, if you go out into the desert to preach, if you go across the land to preach to people, sell your coat to buy a sword. You know, and the idea is like selling your coat, going across the desert, you could freeze to death. But he's saying that the means of self-defense, probably against man and beast out in nature, is more important than a warm coat.
Yeah. And I really think that is true. I think it is the two sides of the same thing is not only do we not want to aggress on others, but we won't tolerate them aggressing upon us. It's a two-sided thing. And that's really the thing with freedom. You can't legitimately want freedom for yourself if you're willing to enslave other people. And that's what government really is. Government on any level, if it is enforced upon people against their will, then we're talking about, to one degree or another, socialism. We're talking about central planning of things like the economy and of labor and of prices and all these things like that are all one aspect or another of slavery. And maybe it's not in complete chattel slavery like was in the South in the mid 1800s, but it's still slavery, whether we're talking about wage slavery or whether we're talking about in debt, you know, being in debt and being enslaved by that.
Well, the slave masters in the form of government and of monopolists and cartelists, you know, that have government corporatist backing, you know, a lot of things that are called capitalism are not really capitalism. Capitalism is good. Most capitalism in the world today is actually a form of corporatism or capitalism, which is a form of fascism. It's government picking winners and losers to one aspect or another. And you can't say that you're in favor of a free market if you want regulation on any peaceful commerce. You know, if you want drugs to be outlawed, but you're totally like, I like the small businessman I want the government to leave him alone. Well, who do you think sells drugs mainly on the street level? It's small businessmen. Yeah, man, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You gotta be entirely consistent down to the smallest level. And you cannot say you're in favor of small government when you're in favor of ridiculous things being outlawed that don't have a victim.
I want to go back and read another chunk from the book there before we go to our next, before we
You got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, well, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I'll save that till after the break. But yeah, that really is what it's about. You know, it's about, not only freedom for ourselves, but freedom for others and having that desire. You know, all of our desires are based on instincts. We talked about this in previous episodes on this same
topic. And we're
going to
talk about it a lot in some upcoming lists, upcoming steps too.
And there's nothing wrong with those instincts. Those instincts, we have them specifically for the reason of survival. You know, all of the major instincts we have. So we just have to keep them in balance.
Otherwise,
that's the whole key.
Otherwise, you turn into a king baby. Last week's episode, go check it out. We talked about the king baby syndrome, which is basically the idea of sitting on a throne that's pooping and demanding everyone do your bidding as an adult. We'll be back.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from a windowless bunker in the Alpha Centauri region at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, high atop Financial Beast Plaza. I'm your host, Mr. Michael W. Dean. I'm talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, from badquaker.com. And we are inventing a 12-step fellowship called Statists Anonymous. It is for using the 12 steps of AA to overcome addiction to loving government and also loving bad ideas and being around and needing bad people. It's got a little bit of, that's kind of Codependence Anonymous, but we just roll it all in there because a lot of things that make people end up loving government involve bad people. So it's part of the process. So today is step six. Ben, recap step six and then drop mad science and school us on it.
Let's see. Number six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And we're also reading from the book 12 Steps and 12, let's see, let me get the name correct. Yeah, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions from 1953. And one of the things that caught my eye in that book in this section about step six is, I'm going to read out of it. It says, having been granted a perfect release from alcoholism, why then shouldn't we be able to achieve by the same means a perfect release from every other difficulty or defect? And that's exactly what we're trying to do in this series. We're trying to take the lessons and the examples of AA and apply them to other things. So we can ask ourselves things like, why do we need these great men in government? Why do we need to idolize, you know, oh, the president, he's our president, he's my president. Why do we need to do that? Why do we need to have a first lady? I mean, if you really think about the terminology here, it's pretty disgusting. The first lady, why is that? What makes her queen of the world? You know, what? Why is she the first lady? Is she like Eve? Do all things flow from her? What kind of ridiculous madness is that?
You know what I think part of it is? Whenever people, whenever Americans like kind of act like, you know, the royal family, like, you know, there's a lot of that with Kennedy. Like, you know, they were attractive and young and rich and they looked like movie stars and they had children who were beautiful and, you know, they were in Time magazine photo spreads and like they made up a name for their compound, Xanadu, or what was it? Is that what they called it? No. Was it Xanadu?
Oh.
No, it was the other one. It was Knight of the Round Table.
Oh.
I forget what they called it. But, you know, whenever Americans treat politicians like the British treat their royalty, I want to scream at them and say, didn't we fight? Well, not we. Wasn't there a war fought to get rid of this crap? I especially think that when I see Americans like actually caring about the actual royal family in England and, oh my God, they're marrying a peasant. It's beautiful. I will watch the wedding and weep. But any of that, I mean, really, I think that a lot of the perks and things that surround the president, like the constant, you know, they treat the president like he's an egg that if it gets broken, the world will end. You know how they do these like these things in like baby classes where they're teaching expectant first time mothers like or father and fathers like, okay, you have to carry an egg around for a week and not break it. And you know, if you can do that, you might be able to have a baby and not have it die. So they do that test. And it's kind of like it's hard to have an egg not break. I've also seen him have an egg in one pocket and then like a 10-pound sack of sugar because that's like the weight of carrying a baby. But, you know, they like if you're watching these documentaries about like the Secret Service and how the president is transported and just the amount of mind-blowing money and, you know, security and cutting-edge technology and like, you know, literally people who can shoot everyone in a crowd if someone looks wonky, you know, that kind of power. It's kind of mind blowing to me. Like it really shows me how they elevate these people to gods. They're literally gods to the people. And they're also gods to the people, not just in the way people worship them, but in the way that like you must pay tribute to them or be smitten or be smote and condemned. You know, even if you don't like them, they don't care if you don't like them, but they make you pay, you know, and they'll take your house if you don't pay that you own your house.
Yeah, there's a ridiculous thing. You hear this often from people who tend to be on the right wing side of the political spectrum, but they'll say like, oh, I don't respect the man, but I respect the office. And that is even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like this. What is magic about this title that makes this person so great that you will ignore their physical deficiencies? You know, the fact that they kill babies and blow up wedding parties and blow up funerals and do all these horrible things around the globe. And you're going to overlook that because he's got a magic title. That's really disgusting.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of something. I'm sending you an email, and I want to read this and discuss it on the air because this is something from my distant past from when I was 18, and I am now 50. And this kind of funny thing happened when I was younger. And I've talked about this before, but a friend of mine that I used to play in a band with actually found me on Facebook. And it was one of the few times that like someone from my past found me on Facebook, even despite not using my real last name on there. That I was like, yeah, I'm happy to see you. And we started chatting. And he actually had this thing. He'd saved it and scanned it and sent it to me. Is your email through yet, Ben?
It's loading now.
Okay, when I was 18, I wrote a column in a local entertainment paper. You know, like one of those throwaway papers that's full of ads and tells you what rock bands are playing and what movies are playing and things like that. Like the kind of thing that was one of the first things that was replaced completely by the internet. But it was called Nightline. And I actually lived upstairs from the place. It was 192 Faulkner Street, Jamestown, New York. I lived in the apartment upstairs. And one day I just went down there and said, hey, I think I can write. Let me write a column. And I, you know, wrote a column, you know, like three inch column. Like they'd give me like 150 words worth of space each week for free. Didn't pay me. And it was my first published writing job, even though it didn't pay. Sometimes they'd buy me beer, you know, give me a six pack of beer or something. So I did get paid. It was my first professional writing job. And do you have it in front of you? This is,
yeah.
Okay. So I wrote this column and it was kind of like the Freedom Fiends, like, you know, before I even had a political awakening at all. And, you know, I was a lazy Democrat, but I still hated government. I was like government square. You know, it's kind of funny. Recently, this thing came out of like someone found this, this essay that Stefan Molyneux wrote in college about the importance of good government, which is kind of funny because he's a guy who has made a career of like, all government is horrible. You know, he used to believe the same things we do. He's kind of changed recently, but he believes in no government is good government. And it turns out that he wrote this essay in college about how great government was and how it needs to be like, you know, cared for and have great men to lead it. So it's not bad government. And I thought that was hilarious. And a lot of people, like several people were like, who don't even like him, were like, oh, come on, you must've made mistakes when you were that age. And I'm like, yeah, but I never backed government. That's square, man. And it's especially funny with him because he's so adamant about like that he's so right about everything. And it turns out like, you know, he felt that way about things that were wrong when he was 18. So when I was 18, I was all sex and drugs and rock and roll, which I think is a far more valid and noble pursuit than writing debate society speeches on the importance of good governance. I didn't like government, didn't like police. Didn't like any of that stuff. And One, I generally wrote articles for this magazine that were like kind of psychedelic, and they were about existence and about like the nature of the mind and the universe and why are we here kind of stuff, combined with like quotes from Black Sabbath and Pink Floyd and musings on rock and roll. I'd start playing in a rock and roll band at the time, a rock band. And, but one week I was busy and I had a deadline. It was like, you know, like Thursday night and it comes out. No, it was like Wednesday night to come out. The magazine came out every Friday morning. So it was the deadline time and I had nothing and I couldn't think of anything. And so the only thing I could think of was, you know, I wrote on a piece of paper, like to my editor and took it downstairs, put it in the mailbox and went back upstairs and went to sleep. I said on the note, I said, okay, here's my article for this week. Print 3 column inches of blank space and title it "What I Like About Ronald Reagan" by Michael W. Dean. Okay. So the next week, this local DJ, he was like the morning drive time talk radio guy. There was the squarest dude in the world. Like I'd listen to him on radio, sent this letter. Now, will you read this letter?
Yeah, a letter to the editor in reply to the
Institution View was the name of my column.
What I like about Ronald Reagan. What I like about Michael W. Dean. This does not indicate that I'm for Reagan, but I do think everyone should be with, not against, the president. This is called respect of leadership, Mr. Dean. And this is like
all caps.
A whole row of caps and exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. I personally enjoy Nightline. The magazine has become a very popular one throughout the Jamestown area. So let's not ruin it by publishing bias and bizarre views of Michael W. Dean. Sincerely, blah, blah, blah.
Sincerely, station, I'll blah, say his blah, name, blah. Steve Emke, SC93 FM Stereo. P.S. I think it would be interesting to see this little drugged out space cadet run for the presidential election in 1984. Okay, here's the fallout of this. My dad, even though I was a drugged out little space kid at the time, my dad was like horrified by this. And I asked him what to do. I sent it to my dad. He lived 2 towns over. And I was like, what should I do about this? And he called his attorney and, you know, like someone has besmirched the Dean name. And he called his attorney and his attorney said, he helped me like write a letter to him. And it was basically like, I demand a public written apology, which I would never do now, but I was, you know, young and my dad and his attorney said this was what to do. So we did that. And we sent it to the magazine, but also to his radio station. Cause he signed it with his station name, like in call letters, like he was acting under their, you know, auspices to do this. He should have not signed his name to that because I found out later he nearly lost his job over this. Like his station owner was really mad at him for getting into a controversy and putting the station's name in it. And he wrote a sincere public apology, as I demanded, that was like obviously like at the point of a gun, you know, like I would like to make a quote, sincere public apology, unquote, to Mr. Dean, blah, blah, blah. You know, it was. I didn't know what I was doing, and my dad told me to do it, so I did it. I didn't know. But the funny thing is, okay, here's the – I get the last laugh. This guy's still doing radio, like down in Tampa on one station – or not at Tampa, somewhere in Florida. He's on like one country music station, and I'm on 34 stations, man. I win, Steve Emke. All right, that's what you get for loving the government. We'll be back after this trip to the market. After that stumble down memory lane.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. freedomfiends.com. You can also blog The Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review The Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
It's Michael Dean talking to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker on the Freedom Fiends, talking about step six in Status Anonymous. And we took a break for a stumble down memory lane, talking about how people are stupid, and I've encountered them for a very long time, being stupid and loving the state. All right, so go ahead, man. What you got there, Ben?
So I have a series of questions I wanted to read for the listeners today. What do you want from government? Do you want a job? Do you want endless income?
You know, in AA, they have like step guides that are not official AA literature, but they're written by people who kind of understand it. Like, you can buy them. There's a whole industry of it. And like, they do things like that. Like, you know, for this is basically what I'm saying is, I think Ben is writing the Status Anonymous six step study guide here.
So do you want endless income from government? Is that what you want it to provide you? Do you want protection from a boogeyman? Oh no, they're going to get us. The bad guy in a cave thousands of miles away is plotting to kill you, and government's going to save you. Is it the feeling of team spirit, of national pride in the achievement of others? Is your flaw such that you need to have some faraway hero who did some dramatic things on your behalf, and then your chest swells with pride over his accomplishments? How much socialism is enough socialism for you? And I'm speaking this directly to the listener on the radio or on the internet. How much socialism do you want? Do you want enough to rob the little old lady down the street so that she can't afford tea this afternoon? Or do you don't want quite that much socialism, but you definitely want her to feel those taxes? Do you want enough socialism to where you can control whether or not, you know, people just let their dogs run wild in your neighborhood, or whether or not those crazy kids come driving down your street too fast? Exactly how much socialism do you want? And why is it that you think that you have to use socialism to accomplish the things you want? Why can't you work with the neighborhood and discuss with other human beings on what we can do to keep dogs from running through the neighborhood and keep crazy kids from driving too fast? And how much do you want to dictate to other people your will? How much do you want to control other people? How much power do you want from government? Not just how much power do you want government to have, how much power do you want from government? And do you wish to use the power of government for good? And that's the thing, like a lot of people, I've gotten in really nasty debates with people because they, you know, if it's somebody who hates George Bush or it's somebody who hates Barack Obama, they'll try to convince you what an evil person that is. And I always say, you know, at any level, these people got into politics because they wanted to do good. They wanted to use government and use the power of government to do good. And that's what you see in ultimately evil people. It doesn't matter what kind of monsters they eventually become. When they first went into it, it was because they wanted to use the power of government for good. And that's really something, you know, we've talked about this a little bit in the past. I've had some brain injury at times. And at one point in time, I lost almost entirely. I lost my reading comprehension capabilities. And so I started doing mental exercises to teach myself how to read and comprehend what I was reading again. And one of the things that I used was a book by J.R.R. Tolkien called The Silmarillion, which is a really difficult book to read, and it's unbelievably boring. But But by reading it over and over, I was instilling into my mind the ability to read and comprehend again. And one of the things that Tolkien wrote in letters to his son, he said, he was talking about his analogy of his of this ring in The Lord of the Rings. He says, "You can make the ring into an allegory of our own time. If you like, the allegory of the inevitable fate that awaits for all attempts to defeat evil." To defeat evil power by power." In other words, I really messed that quote up, but what he was saying is you can't use evil power to defeat evil power. You can't defeat power by power. And he related that directly to fixing government. You can't get involved in government to fix government. You can't use government to fix government. You can't use something that is inherently evil to make something less evil. Two wrongs don't make a right. In another quote, he said, "The most improper job of any man, even saints, is bossing other men. Not one in a million is fit for it, and least of all those who seek the opportunity."
Yeah. Good stuff, Ben. I want to hear more of it, so I'm going to listen to these ads.
Yeah.
For wonderful products and services.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. All right, talking to Ben Stone, Bad Quaker, about step 6 of Statists Anonymous. Drop some more mad science, Ben.
Right before the break, I was really poorly quoting J.R.R. Tolkien. Now I can't even say his name.
Anarchist.
And he was. He actually wrote that to his son in a letter before his death. He told his son that he was an anarchist. He said not the whiskered bomb throwing type, but he said a political anarchist. And his whole point was, you know, who really among us is fit for office? Who is fit to rule over the rest of us? And the answer is no one. Absolutely no one. Not even a saint.
They're all Gollum. My precious power of the ring.
Yeah.
And even if they're not, once they get that power, they become that. Because that's what power does to people. And so who is unfit for office? Anybody who seeks it. Here's how you know. Like, if there's a politician who's running for office, and it could be mayor, president, anything in between, dog catcher, it doesn't matter. How do you know they're unfit for office? Because they're seeking it. It's that simple.
And the answer is not to, like, have an office and have it filled with somebody winning a contest, like on was it the Secretary of Agriculture on Idiocracy won it in a contest on a radio show, and he's like 14. Okay, so no, it's not to have an office, and that does not mean there'd be blood in the streets and rioting. There would be anarchy, which is peacefully people exchanging things here and there. And I'm not saying it would be quiet and mellow and kumbaya. It would probably be a little louder than most of the world is right now, a little more sporty. But, and, you know, there might be a few days of increased violence as the sociopaths get removed from the gene pool while trying to commit actual crimes. But, yeah, man, it would work better. It would work better. Without the government, who would build the roads? People other than the mafia. That's what I say.
And part of the problem in this formula is that political power is a drug that makes heroin look like aspirin. And, you know, it really is.
No, because it makes heroin look like, you know, milk or water, because aspirin even has slight side effects.
Yeah. Well, heroin, you know, does things. I mean, it's a
yeah.
In theory, anyway, yeah. It's a medicine.
Yeah. It was sold by a medicine by the same company that Bayer, who make the aspirin. They actually own the patent on it. And they don't like to admit that anymore. They've they will release that trademark. I think they've released it into the public domain by this point and said, no, that's not us.
I have a confession that I wanted to hit since we're in step six on this.
Yeah.
And it's kind of something that we inferred in a previous episode. I can't remember which one. But my confession is sort of written out in this book. When I was reading through step six in the book, I hit it. So I want to read that. It says, self-righteous anger also can be very enjoyable. In a perverse way, we can actually take satisfaction from the fact that many people annoy us, for it brings a comfortable feeling of superiority. And we kind of expose that.
It's the king baby thing, man.
We kind of exposed that in our complaints about the Budweiser commercial and in our other complaints throughout the show today. But that is something that's in me that I recognize it's something that I really have to struggle to control, because in a very real way, I kind of enjoy looking down my nose at stupid people in the fact that they annoy me with their stupidity. So that Budweiser commercial where they make like really dumb statements in the commercial, I get a little feeling of superiority, like, aha, I caught you. And with commercials in general, I find myself doing that with commercials on television, where I catch them pulling a trick with me, and it annoys me that they're trying to pull this advertising trick. But at the same time, I kind of get this superiority feeling, like, you know, you didn't fool me. I caught that. I saw that. But that can be taken all the way to the point of a flaw, of a character flaw, if you don't watch yourself and keep it in balance, because you can get so much of a feeling of superiority that you feel like, that you're above other people. And that's really a destructive tendency if it's if you don't keep it into check.
Yeah.
Another word from that, or another line from that same section of the book is, here we are not trying to help those we criticize, we are trying to proclaim our own righteousness. And that's kind of what we end up doing with this flaw in myself that I'm confessing to here. It's not really, me complaining about somebody on a commercial pulling an advertising trick doesn't make them a better person. It only fluffs my own ego in the fact that
Do you mean it doesn't make them worse?
Right, right. It doesn't help them or hurt them in either way for me to sit at home and feel like I'm superior because I caught their trick. I wrote this down in my notes. It says, the flaws that we have that have not left us looking up from the gutter are the ones that we are least likely to part with, even when we know they hurt others. Okay, so looking at this flaw, like there are things, there are aspects of addictions that when you're laying in the gutter and you're looking up and you're like, alcohol has done this to me. I'm laying down here in the gutter. I'm laying in my own
sick.
And you recognize, man, I gotta do something about this situation. It's killing me. If I keep drinking, it's gonna kill me. Well, that's one level of recognizing your problem. But recognizing a problem that's not gonna kill you is a lot more difficult. And recognizing it and coming to grips with saying, this is something I have to control. It's something I have to set aside. And that's sometimes really difficult because you don't recognize that thing as a thing that's going to crush you. It's only a thing that's maybe hurting your relationship with other people, or you might even know that it hurts other people, and you still kind of keep it around as a pet because you enjoy to a certain extent that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like that. Keep it around as a pet. Keep your bad habits around as a pet. Yeah, I think people do that. There's a saying in AA, and it's not, I don't think it's even in the AA book. It might be, but I think it's more like kind of anecdotal stuff that someone said at a meeting one time that they heard somewhere else, and it became part of the spoken canon, but not the written canon. And I've said this before on a show, but this would be the most appropriate place to repeat it. I haven't said it for a couple of years, I don't think. And there's a famous story, and it's about resentments and holding on to resentments and, you know, holding on to bad habits and holding on to things that are bad for you, but you keep them around as a pet. Very simple story. Guy's walking alongside a lake, sees another guy out in the lake holding a giant rock and drowning and yelling, "Help me, I'm drowning." The guy on the shore yells, "Drop the rock, drop the rock." And the guy drowning holding the rock says, "But it's my rock." Drop the rock.
And
man.
We do that.
That's the moral of that story.
We really do that. I want to emphasize too, that this is, we're talking about a journey, and we're not talking about something that's walked out in a single day. So step six that we're talking about today is something that we work on for the rest of our life.
And that's why we've decided to go with the revised 12 steps, which are more present tense than the original 12 steps, which were like, we did it, it's done kind of thing. And I think that the guys who were originally writing, when they were writing it, I think they kind of didn't think it all the way through to the end, or they needed it right now that day. So they said, we've done this. You know, they didn't think about that it's going to be important for it to become a repeating process of steps you work every day in every situation intuitively without even going through them one by one in your mind, which really is how recovery in a 12-step program works. And they will tell you that in any 12-step program. You know, you do these for the rest of your life and you're not suddenly struck wonderful when you quit drinking, and you're not suddenly stuck free of statism when you decide, you know, maybe government might not be that good. Like, I've actually made jokes. Like, I've said that you're my Liberty sponsor and we kind of co-sponsor each other. You kind of were. Like, I was not as solid on all this when I first started listening to your podcast and then started talking to you, and you and Nima Vedati really dragged me kicking and screaming and with love. And my wife did too. And you know, we've made jokes though about, like, you know, Liberty sponsor, you know, an AA, like, your sponsor is the guy that helps you through the steps, but he's also the guy that you can call in the middle of the night and wake up when he has to be up for work in 2 hours and say, "I think I'm going to drink." And you know, a good sponsor will probably, if they can, like, get up and come over to your house and sit with you and maybe even call in sick for work, or, you know, probably not, but we'll definitely talk to you and take your call in the middle of the night at least. And, you know, if he doesn't have to suffer in his job to do it, he might come over and lose sleep to sit and talk to you. And I've joked that, like, Ben is my Liberty sponsor. Like I would call you up in the middle of the night and say, "Ben, I'm going to vote. Talk me out of it." But really, like, you know, I've seen people become completely free of the state in everything they say, and then run to the state when it suits them. And that's not good recovery in Status Anonymous. Like, you know, Stefan Molyneux using, you know, like, copyright takedown notices to silence critics. And recently he formed a corporation and trademarked a name of the corporation, which is kind of weird from a guy who's done about 100 hours of shows on why corporations and trademarks are evil. And, you know, a guy I know who was very anti-intellectual property, and he was broke, and he got an offer at a job company, a 4-man job company doing their publicity, you know, and the company, like, is based on intellectual property. And just all the things of, like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying, like, if I saw a murder going on in front of my house, I'd probably call the police. But I'm certainly not going to call the police if my neighbors are playing the stereo too loud. I'll go over and ask them not to. And, you know, if they won't, I'll probably go down in my basement where I can't hear them until they're done. You know, you don't run to the state. If you run to the state, if you say all government is bad, and then you're quick to run to the state and then make excuses for it, you really haven't worked your steps in Status Anonymous. And you're really kind of just being a bandwagon jumper by calling yourself free of the state. I see a lot of it, man.
You know, and you and I, you're saying this, and it's the case with me as well. We kind of work each other as sponsors in different ways. And I think that the two people that you inferred there, well, Molyneux that you said his name, and the other guy, I know who you're talking about. I think that they don't have that other person that they can go to and say, you know, "Hey, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm thinking about voting. Help me.
I was thinking about
forming a corporation."
Yeah, because they're people who think they have King Baby Syndrome. They think they're absolutely right. And can't take advice from other people because they consider themselves perfect and everyone else is below them. And that's really, that's really when you become old, you know, like old isn't really an age. It's when you decide, you know, everything, you're old. I mean, you know, little kids think that, but then adults know better. But then when you really as an adult think, I know everything, you're doing it wrong. You're failing and you're old. I don't care what your age is.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com. FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Freedom Fiends. Tasing you with liberty. All right, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, drop some mad science. Give me the redemption in the third act for step six in Status Anonymous.
Yeah, so real quick recap. Let me just read step six again so that we have it fresh in our minds. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And Michael and I talked about how important it is, not only within this step, but in the other steps that we've talked about, it's important that we have somebody to bump things off of. We have that sponsor. And one of the major defects, I saw this in the corporate world. I've spent way too many years working in the corporate world. And I saw example after example of managers who either were failing horribly or were in the process of getting ready to fail horribly. And one of the biggest reasons that I saw that they were failing is because they didn't have someone near them who could stop them and get their feet back on the ground and say, dude, you are really messing up. Here is how you're messing up. They didn't have that person. Managers would tend to surround themselves with yes men that were just bootlickers that would just tell them how great they were and how wonderful the job that they were doing and how important they were.
That kind of reminds me of people on the internet who poke everybody and then block people who don't think they're great for poking everybody.
Yeah, it's the same ego fluffing. So I want to read out of the book again. It says, if we would gain any real advantage in the use of this step on problems other than alcohol, we shall need to make a brand new venture into open-mindedness. We shall need to raise our eyes towards perfection and be ready to walk in that direction. It will seldom matter how haltingly we walk. The only question will be, are we ready? And the really important thing here to take away from step six in this is this vast difference between these two things. Like one is a way of saying, this I can't really give up right now. You face it, you realize it's a thing that is a character flaw or a problem, and you say, I can't really give it up right now. But I want to work towards it. I know what perfection is. I want to move in that direction. And the opposite of that is, I will never give this up. This is the thing I will defend to the last. This is like defending the state like it's my mother. And the difference between saying, I can't really give this up right now, or I will not give this up, is the difference between, really, it's the difference between success and failure. So when the book tells us that, you know, it seldom matters how haltingly we walk, It means, yeah, you know, you're gonna move forward. You're gonna take a step backwards. You're gonna, as long as you've got perfection as your goal and you're moving towards it and you're willing to, at least in theory, set aside whatever that security blanket of the government or whatever it is in the addiction or the dependency problem that you've got. If you can look at it realistically and say, I want to set this aside, maybe I can't set it aside today, but that's the direction I want to go in, then you still have hope. But it's when you say, no, I am never going to, that's when your mind closes and you're not able to really deal honestly with the thing. Fortunately, Michael and I have each other and other people around us that don't let us get away with that.
Yeah. I mean, really, it's like step six doesn't mean you have to make huge changes today. It means you have to be willing to going forth. It's not that big of a step as it sounds like, but it is kind of a big step because it really means understanding that what you're doing right now is not going to get you where you want to go. And you need to look at other directions and look outside yourself for guidance from other people or from a higher power. And that doing the same things over and over and expecting different results is insanity. And you got to be willing to try new things. And I don't just mean like try a new health supplement or, you know, a new watch or a new internet service provider or a new cell phone company. I mean, like things that are really fundamental to who you are and how you do things.
One of the last lines in the book says, the moment we say no, never, our minds close against the grace of God.
Yep. It's all about willingness to change. Thanks, Ben.
And hey, thank you, Michael.
We'll be back tomorrow with step seven in Status Anonymous here on the Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. That's me and Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker from badquaker.com. Ben Stone, thank you for your service.
Thank you, Michael.
Worms.
Worms.
It's a good show, man.
It was fun.
Yeah.